Coming to you live from Central Texas, it's Let's Talk with your host, Eric Jackson. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the great conversation. And now, here's the host of Let's Talk, Eric Jackson.
Good afternoon. It's Thursday, y'all. One more day for that weekend. One more day. That's all you got left. That's all we have left, right? One more day. That's right. Welcome to Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Eric Jackson. And today we have another outstanding show planned for you. So if you want to join the conversation, it's no problem. Just dial in 347-838-8622. Email me, ericletstalk@gmail.com, or join me in my chat room. Only thing you have to do is log on to your Facebook, MySpace, whatever social media site you're using, and just join me in the chat room. We can talk in the chat room as well. You know, that's the wonderful thing about it. You know, we can talk anywhere. And if you just want to follow me on Twitter, DrivenForLife62, and for is F-O-R, by the way, just in case some of y'all wanted to know. Now, remember we had a show a couple of days ago on depression. And you know how some people said, some days you just don't feel, you have that certain feeling. As the kids say these days, you're feeling a certain way, right? Well, that was me today, y'all. I was feeling a certain way. But thanks to a couple of good friends, I'm on the air and ready to rock and roll. So I hope y'all ready to go with me because it's time to do the thing on thing. Now, before we get started today, of course, y'all know I got to play my favorite commercial for Taste More Like Barbecue and Snack Bar. Hey, you ain't going to find much better barbecue here in Killeen, Texas. Go to Central Texas area. So, without further ado, let me get this commercial on, and I'll see y'all in about a minute and 30 seconds. Hey, Killeen Fort Hood, are you looking for some down-home smoked barbecue? Meat so tender it falls off the bone? If so, I have the perfect place for you. Taste Like More Barbecue and Snack Bar, located at 1015 Adams Avenue, just 2 minutes from the Fort Hood East Gate. They're open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. The menu includes barbecue ribs, chicken, mouth-watering brisket, macaroni and cheese, potato salad, coleslaw, baked beans, collard greens, rice and beans. They also have regular tea. They also have Kool-Aid. Yes, y'all, Kool-Aid, the red Kool-Aid. You hear me? Oh, yeah, and all the food is prepared daily. That's what I'm talking about. You have trouble getting off of work and you're going to sit down and eat, no problem. They take calling orders. Just give them a call, 254-213-9660. Tastes Like More Barbecue and Snack Bar. Woo! Barbecue so good, makes you want to come back for more. Check them out. That's right, Taste More Like More Barbecue and Snack Bar. Ha, 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 ha. That's right, y'all. And he is veteran-owned, African-American-owned. And he gives 10% discounts for anybody in military uniform or if you're a college student or just a student, period, with the proper ID, you get that 10% discount. And I tell you what, man, nobody, you can't beat that when you got good food, you know? So go by and give him, check him out, Monday through Friday. He can't beat it, right? Right. Now that we have all the little crazy, the little stuff out the way, let's go on to get started and talk about some things that's going on around here in the world. In the world. And, you know, it has been, besides, you know, there are some Republican people running for office, there's pretty much been a pretty quiet, quiet election year. You know, of course, you got Donald Trump, you know. I don't know what that If anything, he need to spend some of that $5 million and get that head fixed. You know, that little wig he wear. Yeah, he need to get that fixed. He need to have that fixed. But anyway, we're not going to talk about Donald Trump right now. But we need to. How in the hell are you going to offer the president of the United States $5 million to go to his charity of his choice if he give you, isn't that like something like almost extortion some kind of way? Like you holding something that nobody else knows about it, knows about. Why? Is it that he, Donald Trump, just needs that type of attention? You know? You know, it just shocks the mind how it just, it's just amazing. Now, this is a billionaire, not a millionaire. This is a billionaire. And you mean to tell me that's the best you can do? And I'm sorry, I think it was five million or five billion? Maybe billion. But regardless, you offering the president of the United States money like that? I don't know. I think something is absolutely, totally wrong with Donald Trump. You know, maybe some of that weird grease is getting in his and seeping into his brain now, and he's just running out of things to do. Maybe. Oh, well, moving on from that. Hey, check this out. Sarah Palin is back. Sarah Palin is back, y'all. Yes, sir, buddy. Sarah Palin is back in the news. She's accusing President Obama of engaging in shuck and jive stick, you know, regarding last month's attack in Libya. You know, she's figuring he's lying and they're covering up something. Okay. But what's she got to do with it? See, once again, what does she have to do with it? I mean, it ain't like you were over there helping protect anybody. So why you want to have anything to do with it? I don't even know, y'all. But it just makes you wonder how every time, you know, things have gotten quiet and stuff, next thing you know, pop, 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 there it is. They come out the woodwork, and not like they're hiding what they're thinking or what they're trying to do. You know, wow. But anyway, moving right along, because, you know, the topic today, I'm sure we're going to have some good conversation on this topic. So we're not going to prolong too much today. Now, there was a lady in Hawaii, Ohio, okay? She worked for Arby's, okay? She worked for Arby's. And the store had gotten robbed twice before. But, of course, she hadn't gotten hurt or anything like that. But, you know, apparently there was a history of the store being robbed. Well, the store was robbed for a third time. And she was fired. I know, now you're going to lie. Why she was fired? And if you're like me, you thought, well, it was an inside job. That's why she got fired. But, no, that's not why she got fired. She got fired because her boss told her don't be staying in the store late, you know, at long hours, after hours. You know, well, apparently she didn't listen to the owner or the franchise owner, and she was robbed for a third time. And couldn't find out it's a violation of Arby's franchise security policy. So, I mean, this store here, it really wasn't. It wasn't corporate owned, so, you know, it was more like a franchise. But, you know, I guess the owner had to do what he had to do. I mean, you done got robbed twice. Now, let's really look at this. If you've gotten robbed twice, you know, once would have been enough for me. But then a second time, you know, why would you continue to do the same thing? Like they're not sitting there, they don't know your routine. Apparently they do. You know, it's just, I mean, I understand taking care of the company business and all that, but it's to a point where sometimes you got to use common sense now. Of course, we don't know what type of location she was in, but apparently it was one where she could get robbed three times. You know, I don't know. Then she had the nerve to say, I just never thought this would happen to me. especially since my life was at stake. Well, damn, after 2 hours, do you think? I mean, come on now. Yeah, the robber this time had a knife, and he actually tussled with the, as I said, tussled with the assailant that had the knife. Golly. You know, not only did she disobey and stay longer than probably she was needed to, she wanted to be a hero and try and fight the man. Look, I'm going to tell you like it is. If you're out there working for anybody's business and somebody come in, give them the dang old money, please. Okay? Just give them the money. Your life ain't worth other people's money. You can always make money back. You can't get your life back. Okay? All right. Now, and that was the news from around the world, around the country, however you want to put it, in your neighborhood. You know, I think that's what I'm going to start calling the show, In Your Neighborhood. What kind of people in the neighborhood? Okay, I can resist that one. Oh, Lord have mercy. Hey, you know what? It's turning out to be a great day. That's right. It's turning out to be a great, great, great day. Now, are we ready? I think we about ready now. I got my little hypeness going again now. So I'm feeling pretty good now. So you know what time that is? It's now time for the topic of the day. The topic of the day. Oh yeah. Now if you want to join in and join in the conversation, that's no problem. Just give me a call, 347-838-8622. Email me, ericletstalk@gmail.com, or hit me on Twitter at drivenforlife62. My chat room is open as well. Just sign into your local media site, and we can do the dang on thing, okay? Now, the topic for the day. Wow, I'm going to love this one. Biracial marriages. Is biracial marriages and relationships the norm? And when I say, are they the norm? Are they considered more of now than regular marriages? People of the same ethnicity? You know, are they? You know, are they? We can say they're more accepted now. Can we say that much? They're accepted better now than they were back in the day. Right? Yeah. I would go as far. Well, I guess you say you, for the most part, say 90%, 95%. Unless I missed out on the boat. About 95% of people are more accepting today than they were back in the days. You know. Yeah, so we're talking about interracial marriages. People of different colors, people of different races, different ethnicity. Ethnicity. Boy, I tell you, that word there'll have you just pushing your teeth all out your mouth. But, you know, and I guess I came up with this topic because it's where I live at, which is in a more of a military community than anything, you know, it's not out of the norm. Actually, it's strange if you happen not to see a biracial couple somewhere, you know, then you may believe you're in the wrong place. So that's why I came up with this, and it just crossed my mind. So I'd like to have y'all comment. What do you think out there? You know, interracial relationships, marriages and relationships, are they the norm for today? You know, even in the African American community, are they becoming the norm where we are marrying outside our race? Now, many say men will do it faster than women will. I can say that. They say women are more picky. No, men don't care. Men see it, and you're a woman, they want you, they're going to get you. More for the most part. They don't care what color you are. But is that really a true statement? Are women actually more picky here than men when it comes to dating outside the race? I guess we'll cover that in a little while, huh? Now, let's talk about this interracial marriage, because it's not like it's a brand new idea or something brand new that just popped up, you know, within the last couple of decades, you know. You know, interracial marriages, man, I mean, they have, yeah, they just, you know, even back in the 70s, when you saw something like that, you really was, you know, like, I don't know. You thought something was wrong with the people, really. You really did. Yeah, because it wasn't something that you saw a lot of. Now, don't forget, now, there were some states not long ago, you know, that had banned and punished anybody or any type of relationship between people of different races. Now, let's go on and admit that. That's right. That's right. Now, let's think about it. Interracial marriages now, you know, and relationships. Let's go on and put that out there, too. Relationships. Because let it little as it be known, you know, there were many interracial relationships back during the slavery days. Hey, don't act like you don't know. Now, whether, you know, now, were they allowed? No. We know this wasn't allowed. You know, we know this wasn't allowed. But that does that mean that everybody just, that you know, that it didn't exist? No. No. Not at all. And the reason why it was so frowned upon, you know, because the white race wanted to maintain the superiority they supposedly had as far as race. That's right. So, with that being said, you know, they couldn't have any interracial relationships going on, unions going on. Not at all. That wasn't a good thing. But they didn't have no problem with it behind closed doors. You see my point? So it's not like it was a secret then, but it's not like it wasn't happening. You know? And then, of course, you know, back then, you know, they thought, you know, there was social inequalities that were involved, too. You know, black person, white person, you know, they're not from the same place. They didn't have the same upbringing. And they're not in the same class. So why you want to marry that black person? Oh, Lord have mercy. I'm just saying. And you know, let's be honest with you. Back in the slavery days, the white men just couldn't get enough of the black ladies. Okay, I'm just saying, and it's not like that's a secret either. Hell, sometimes the white women was glad that was going on. Okay, anyway, so that's kind of sort of aware interracial relationships and things begun, but it's not like it was really accepted. Actually, it was not accepted at all, except for behind closed doors. But out of all that, it became some interesting things. Some interesting things happened. From then, it were no longer just black and white. No, because of course, with all the different mixing and carrying on, you know, now you had to have titles. And when I say titles, I mean colors. You just couldn't be African American. You just couldn't be black. You just couldn't be a red bone. You know, they had to put titles on it. And the reason why they started putting titles on things is so you can track the blackness in you. That's right. They can track the blackness in you. So now they start checking the black in you. Then you get names like mulatto. You know, what were some of the other ones? Mulatto, Greg. I mean, it was, and the reason why you were given these names because in some instances, if you were light enough and you had your enough white in you, here's the catch. You were allowed to deal with in white society back then. But, I mean, that's just a history. Hey, if y'all want to know, hey, I'll give you the website in a minute. You can go and check it out for yourself. But anyway, so that was the case. So from the late 1600s until June 12, 1967, there were laws everywhere against interracial marriages. And Virginia had some of the most stiffest and hardest laws, if anybody. But June 12, 1967, the laws were revived because of the Supreme Court case of Loving versus Virginia in 1958. Now, this is a couple, a black man and a white woman, you know, because at the time they couldn't get married in Virginia. So they went off to Washington, D.C. and got married. Well, Virginia had a law that even if you did go off and get married, you couldn't come back to that state without being prosecuted. And, of course, that's what happened. And, of course, they went to court over it. And in 1967, the Supreme Court reversed all that stuff. And can we say it was over? Heck no. It was you could just do it legally now. But was it over? No. And we know it wasn't over. But anyway, back to this thing. Interracial marriages. Now, you have to look at some things and you have to wonder. Because I know you see them walking out. You see some women walking with, Asian women with black men. Asian men with white ladies, Asian men with black women with Asian men. You know, you just see it all. So interracial marriage or relationships is just something that just like, you can't walk anywhere without seeing it now. Unless you're just living up in the backwoods somewhere. And we don't even want to talk about those type of relationships. But anyway. Now, but you have to wonder, how did she get him or how did he get her? You know, because she's like, say in the case of the Asian, you know, the guy may be 6'2". The Asian woman is what? And I'm not stereotyping anybody. Thank y'all for thinking that. You know, what, 5'2", 5'3", with the big sandals on? Yeah, how in the hell? But see, here's the catch. You know, people who marry interracially, listen now, people who marry interracially, did you know, usually they have the they have the same traits. They share the same traits. In other words, they come from similar places, they want similar things, and they attract each other. Now, if you live, let's put it this way, if you're a young black male. Your family is doing well. Your family is doing well. And your parents move you out into the suburbs. Well, back in the day when you moved out to the suburbs, you may have been the only African American or person of color out there in that neighborhood. Then what happened? Then you growing up, that's the only people you've grown up knowing, socializing with. So is it more likely that you would date and marry, someone of a different race or color? I would say yes, because that's the environment that you're raised up in. Now, I was having a conversation with somebody earlier, and we was talking about this. You know, and it was like, well, women have a more of a little harder time doing this because we think if we love our black men. I said, well, that's fine. Say we love our black men. And plus, you know, and also was said that, you know, we prefer to have a black man over anything else. But a lot of cases, it depends on where you're living at, what your status is. You know, depending on what your status is. Now, well, let's get back to the traits. You know, usually people who marry interracially or have relationships, you know, with people of other races are either highly educated, professional, middle class, or working class people. Some marry at an older age, have similar status. Now, that's an interesting word right there. Other interracial marriages exist in their family, which is something they see on the norm, so they really don't see anything wrong with it. And they are people who have been married before. Now, you know, that's what I say. That's what it says. Those are why most common reasons why. Most common. Now, y'all hear like beep, beep, beep. That mean, boy, I tell you, they are tearing me up here on my phone. Let's see. It's more acceptable because we raise our children to not look at color. We are all on a level playing field. And that's a text I just received. Now, if we're all on a same level playing field, I'm not going with that one. I mean, I know how we teach our kids, and I know how we should be teaching our kids. But as far as being on the same playing level, we're never on the same playing level. Never. Uh-uh. Nix nine, no. That's not, no. Because, you know what, though? And here's the thing. And that's what I wanted to go back to, similar status. Because in a lot of cases, the status may seem similar, but it's not similar. And I'm going to tell you why. Because sometimes most blacks, African-Americans, okay. Now, I'm just going to put it out there. Look, most of the time, if they get involved in a biracial marriage or a relationship, and you start going down family history, they will find that as far as similar in status, that doesn't exist. Because the family that you're marrying into definitely has more economic, financial power than your family will ever have, than you would ever have. So there is no such thing as similar status. You know, what we need to explain to our children. Yeah, I mean, we can tell them we're good. Yes, we are just as good as the other race. Yeah, we can tell them that, but we don't have the financial backing or the power that the other ones do. So as far as having a similar status, no. No. And maybe that's why some of us actually get involved with that, so we can see if we can't get them to that status. Uh-oh. I got a call on the line, y'all. That's what I'm talking about. Talk to me.
Yeah,
hello,
peace.
You on Let's Talk.
Yeah, peace, man. Thank you for taking my call. Name is Matt, too, calling from Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll just check you out, man. Yeah, as far as the interracial marrying and stuff like that, and relationships. You know, one of the things I think we have to be very cognitive of is making sure that we understand that what matters most is how we're seen in a society and what class that society will put us in. You know, how that society classifies, you know, a biracial person.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what matters when you're talking about politics, sociology, and all things having to do with culture. And so, and particularly in America, if you're talking about a biracial, let's say if you're talking about a biracial marriage between a white and a black, well, if any babies come out of that, this culture sees them as Negroes.
Mm.
And we fooling ourselves if we don't... If we don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? And you have a great point. And we really do. You know, as far as, you know, back in the day when babies came out, you know, that's where they get started being called bastards. Mm-hmm. You know, and if a child was born, you know, to an interracial couple during that time, the child had no rights whatsoever. None.
Right.
You know, so, but, you know, as far as being married in today's society, interracially, you know, there's still names that, you know, people call them, you know. And then, you know, you just have to, that's why I think it depends on the area of the country that you may live in to where it may be more accepted, you know, in one place than it is somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the West, Southwest, you know, they have a higher percentage of interracial couples than, say, the South and the Northeast, which, of course, makes a little bit more sense. You think about if you go back into slavery, the slavery days, then that would make a lot of sense.
Right. But, you know, to some degree, man, and I think in today's world, you are, man, I know, boy, people are going to not like this, but you almost do a disservice to me to have a biracial baby in the culture of today. I mean, because, and I know people can love, you know, I understand all that, but when the kids grow up, if they don't understand the reality, it's almost like it's a culture shock to them because they got a white parent and a black parent. They think, hey, color ain't got nothing to do with nothing. But when they get out in the world, that world slap them in the face, you know, with that type of thinking.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's that is so true. And actually, there are some, believe this or not, there are some actual kids out there now growing up that have never dated someone of the same race. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's just the way that it is. I mean, as cultural, but is this a good thing? Is this considered what we call the normal thing now?
Well, now I'm just gonna give my opinion. When you say good, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think it's good for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's me now. You know, again, I can't tell nobody who to love and all that. And for the reasons that I stated earlier. Now, you know, if there was a such thing as a biracial state,
mm-hmm.
well then, you know, where the politics and the sociology and all that was biracial, well then, like you said, the family and the kids, you know, stand to be normal in that state.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I don't know. I don't think it's a good idea. I know people call me racist for that, though. But
you know what? Let them call it what it's called. I mean, you know, that's your opinion. That's what it's supposed to be about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, as of 2010, there was 8.4% of all U.S. marriages were interracial, compared to back to 1980 when it was just 3.2%. I know that don't sound like a lot, but that has a, you know, that showed it's on the rise. And today, it's 2012. I know, you know, that number has to be a little, at least closer to 10%, at least, you know. But what are we missing here, though? What are we missing? Are we failing to communicate properly to our kids the importance of staying within our own race? Or should we even be communicating something like that to them?
Now, you know, my answer, man, is going to be based off of the history and the history that I understand with us being in this country.
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, I think we should be telling them to stay within their own race. I really do. And I'll give you another reason, man. When we already have an identity crisis and we, you know, blacker than black, you know, we ain't even interracial, and we still don't know who we is. So how we going to bring a mixed race baby in there and get him an identity? I mean, let's be real, man. We don't know. We want to be colored, black, African-American. I mean, good grief.
You know what? That is true. But hold on, I got another call on the line. Want to get it? We'll have another conversation with you.
All right.
Ooh, hello, you're on the air. Let's talk. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Mr. Solution. How are you today?
Oh, good. Thanks for asking. Well, the answer to your question is obviously no, based on your own statistics.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the norm. They're not even close to the norm. This is a very racially, out of all of history, the United States is the only country that ever had what was called the peculiar institution. I encourage you to look that up. No other country in history. First of all, race is not a scientifically verifiable construct. In other words, it doesn't even exist. It's BS, and of course, it was used to enslave a group of people and to commit genocide against other groups of people, but most notably, to enslave a group of people for economic profit. And so when you say race, I mean, what are you really talking about?
Right.
It doesn't exist. You have human traits and characteristics that go through all ethnic groups. And historically, the way groups were differentiated were through their culture, primarily their language. Language is the primary indicator of culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this biracial thing, now we visited this before in a slightly different form, but it's certainly, I was reading an article here, new research shatters myth and provides new hope for black love and marriage. And that's an article dated Monday, August 8th, 2011. It's rather recent. But
mm-hmm.
I shared with you what was called the exchange theory, whereby this was developed over 30 years ago, back in 81. And what it is, it's a psychological line of inquiry called the exchange theory. And it suggests that in the piggy bank of goods of each of us, we bring to a possible relationship money, smarts, sense of humor, looks, family background, education, gender. African heritage is devalued compared to European or Asian heritage. And it goes on to say that African American females, even with lots of education, do not fetch as much value in the marriage market. And it is good to talk about it as a market, because one is marketing their skills for starting a relationship and actually progressing toward a commitment or a committed relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But again, with respect to your question, the answer is a solid no, of course. And where do you want to go from there? There's one other item. Asian females and white males
mm-hmm.
are the most liberal in terms of marrying outside of their ethnic group, whereas black Americans are the most conservative when it comes to marriage. Now, marriage has dropped for everybody. In fact, there are more single people in America, or as the U.S. Census and Pew Research Center stated, there are more single females than married females. And that has to do with the feminist movement and things of that nature, confusion with respect to gender communication. We could even work out the roles if we knew how to communicate. And that's going forward, that's going to be our obligation to rectify, to identify and rectify.
All right. Hey, you know what? What you just said about the Asians and African Americans is definitely true. You know, because in 2010, 9%, just 9% of whites married outside their race, along with 17% of African Americans, 26% of Hispanics, and 28% of Asians. So, I mean, and 24% of the African American males married outside their race in 2010, compared to 9% of African American women.
Now, is that regional or national?
Well, this was a national study done. This was from the census.
So that 24%, if that's true, that would have to include both males and females. Is that what you meant or what?
No.
You said 24% of black males married
right.
other than black females?
Right, in 2010.
What's the name of that study?
I'll place the link right in the chat room.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you made a good point, too. The reason I ask you was it national or regional is because the United States, looking up the concept of peculiar institution, it still has strong racial divisions, and mostly on your coastal areas, either on the east or west coast, you'll find more biracial marriages. In the heart of America, and like you say, in the south, no, you won't find as much.
No.
Yeah,
I mean,
so that's why I ask you, was it regional or national?
Well, I mean, because like I was telling my other caller, you know, a lot of it is centered on the West Coast and the Southwest. Not much of it. Some in the South, you know, it's getting more now than it used to be.
Right,
and maybe we think we see a lot of it when really it's not. But because of the slavery, the way the nation was divided in days, it's less prominent in the South than it is past, you know, Texas and all that.
And let's not forget now, we talk about the Bible Belt, and the Bible tends to be quite separatist and racist, despite, I love to get into discussions, sometimes heated exchanges with a lot of times with so-called Bible believers.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that there is this strong undercurrent. It's basically BS. It's a bunch of lies. But we do have these exchanges. We have these discussions. But, yeah, they run. And see, the Bible does not support racial discrimination.
No, it does not.
It is the heathen versus the believer, and also it deals with culture. And you've always had people of different race, different skin coloration, you know, mixed in. I mean, we've always been mixed. And the distinction was made, again, culturally and not based on skin color. Skin color was an easy identifier in America, to keep one group segregated and keep them as a permanent labor class. That's why you had some people, I think it's called the imitation of life. You had this so-called passing by a lot of these would be black people who looked white phenotypically.
Mm-hmm.
They were phenotypically or outwardly appearing white, but they had, you know, black pedigree. And,
right.
You know, they even went as far, what you were talking about just now, Lovings versus Virginia.
Right.
That was, I don't know if you mentioned the Virginia so-called racial purity code. I mean, they had a whole science to support their laws, but it was completely lies. It was completely bogus.
Right.
And it was all designed to extract labor, to steal labor from the blacks that were brought here. And that was the purpose of that racial distinction. And since they couldn't force American Indians knew the landscape, and they would also fight. They would wage war against the whites. And they would die as opposed to being slaves. So they didn't make good slaves. American Indians did not make good slaves. And that's a good thing. So using the so-called coloration barrier or color barrier, it was easier to identify blacks and keep them subjugated longer, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, that makes plenty of sense. That makes plenty of sense. Oh, man. A caller from Chicago, you got any anything you want to add?
Yeah, from Michigan, yeah. Michigan, I think one of the things also, when we're talking about this, the concept of race that we have to keep in mind is the way that Dr. Claude Anderson and the perspective he gives on it in his book, both Black Label White Wealth, and also Powernomics. And essentially, he sees it as a competitive construct, and its purpose being to maintain control of resources and mechanisms of power. And also, the concept of race is basically an extension of the concept of family, because ultimately what you're talking about is relationships.
Hmm.
You see? So when let's say you two brothers and your wives and you have families and relatives and things of that nature, and say, well, you own a corporation and most of the people that you've hired are black, right?
Okay.
That's from the context of racism. You say, well, man, you racist. But no, you're just talking about the relationships you have. You have relationships with your neighbors, with the people you play golf with the people that you're in fraternities with. Their sons and daughters need employment. You give that employment to them. Well, whites do the same thing. And to me, there's nothing wrong with that. We just have not done it. Nothing at all wrong with that. That's not racist to me.
Well, you know what though? When you put it in there, put it that way, you're absolutely correct. It's not.
It's an extension of family. Let me give. Watch this. If I know you, brother, and say we're not even, let's say we were in the same fraternity,
mm-hmm.
and let's say there was a white talent and your son looking for a job, went to the same school, same GPA and everything, right?
Okay.
Who do you think I'm going to give that job to? I'm going to give it to your son.
Mm-hmm.
We went to school together. We have a relationship. We in the same frat, you see?
Oh, yeah.
See. Now, is that racist? No, that's a relationship. It's an extended relationship.
Wow.
And that's what whites have always done.
Hmm. That is so true. Mr. Solution?
Well, yeah, I see what he's saying, but
that
was okay. But I think a sharp distinction has to be made. He said that race is analogous to family, and it's about relationships, right?
It's an extension. It's an extension of the concept of family and relationships.
Right, right. But you're not obviously, if you know Dr. Anderson, you read Black Labor, White Wealth. And I've read those two books, too, and promote them on a regular basis. You know that race as created in America and as connected to the peculiar institution was not about family. It certainly it wasn't about the promotion of the slave family. It was the promotion of the white family. And that's, you know, Dr. Anderson makes an interesting observation, and he made the observation that a white today is born with 86% of what they need to succeed in life. It's in their churches, businesses, homes, organizations, and so on and so forth.
That's why I started that, though, brother. You must have missed that part, because I started from the competitive concept.
Race right, but you
basically
don't compete.
About a competitive concept, huh?
Right. Okay. I'm pretty sure we're on the same page here.
Yeah.
But slavery was
so.
Not about competing. It was about giving one group an advantage over the other. And that still exists to this day. I point out often that two white men have a higher net worth than the entire roughly 38 million black Americans. If you put the net worth of Warren Buffett and Bill Gates together, just two of them. Now, that's not true of any other group.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow that?
That shows a huge
wealth disparity. That's what that is pointing out. It's a supernatural wealth disparity almost. It's just absolutely unreal.
Well, I mean, like you said, the numbers and the science is there, so it's clear that the engineering of the, you know, wealth is along racial lines. So I mean, we that's a discussion we, you know, that's 20 years ago that we know that to be that's a matter of fact. So, I mean.
And it's still true today because
yeah.
Another point that Dr. Anderson made is that on the eve of the Civil War, what was it, 1861,
mm-hmm.
98% of blacks worked for whites. And that's understandable that most of them were enslaved.
And it's still the same.
Full circle, that's right. 98% of blacks still work for white.
Well, but you know, it's funny, but it ain't. You understand? Because the joke is on us. You know, so in that case, you know, you have to almost have to laugh to keep them crying.
Oh, and by the way, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, that's all I was going to say. Was that right?
Okay, the way that dovetails into relationship desirability is that the black woman is not really – what you just said, Eric, is patently not true. It's easily borne out that the black woman wants a relationship with the black man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's delusional. That's a lie. She does not want a relationship with the black man because – she's not friendly with the black, or none of her behaviors would indicate that. Now, I'm not talking about all. I'm talking about 90 to 95%. Because if you look at the way they behave toward black men, it's antagonistic. And if you look at from whence they are fed, most black women either work for government America.
Or white men. Just say white men and that'll sum it up.
Well, no, but I want to specify. They either work for government America or a few of them work in corporate America. So they have no allegiance to black
right.
men, and
right.
they're not building anything with black men.
Right.
In fact, if you look at black women, black American women, are more on the side of whites
absolutely.
Than they are in allegiance with blacks, with black men, believe it or not.
Well, but can I add something there? Because I think we on to something, or we on to what's the actual facts. But
yeah.
when she has been born, raised, fed, and protected in a European culture, that is exactly what she's supposed to do.
Well, I would disagree with that because actually live outside of your environment if your information dictates. Now, see, the thing of it is, if black women are saying they want to be with black men, which I would submit that there is no model for communicating between the genders, and that has to exist in order for anything else to happen. And
well,
I notice we perpetually miss that, at least most of us anyway.
Well,
but
what
I'm saying is that the black woman is equal now, both legally and socially. And just to point, look, men want the same thing that women want. In other words, men want to be protected and provided for too. Okay? And if you look at it historically, God was the provider for both man and woman. He's the creator of them, and he provided for them. So women don't have exclusivity on wanting things that human beings characteristically want. And men want to be courted, for example. Now, when you talk about the dating relationship and you ask a woman what is her responsibility to a strange man, because, you know, ultimately that's who we marry, are strangers. We don't marry members of our own family. She has no clue as to what her obligation should be. She oftentimes will misinterpret the scriptures even. She'll say, well, I just corrected a woman on her biblical bias. She says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing. I go, but wait a minute. When a man first meets you, you're not a wife. He doesn't even like to know. He doesn't even know if he likes you. You could stink. I mean, you know, as a person that he doesn't even want to be around, and vice versa. So the thing of it is there's the, now with respect to black preachers, and a black woman pointed this out, so I give her credit for that, obviously. But it's to preachers' advantage to keep women single. They make better tithers. But the black women claiming that they want a black man, all you need ask them, well, what do you do to demonstrate that? And I'm going to tell you, usually not a damn thing, but complain.
Mm.
Well, one of the things,
if a person said they wanted a job, you would at least, they would prepare themselves, do a few interviews, maybe ask a few people, do you know where an opening is? No, but that's not what they do. So, in other words, men who suffer from TBS, tiny ball syndrome, will not hold women accountable so that we can actually come to the negotiation table and discuss these issues. These are very important issues.
Well, one of the things, if I can jump in here, is I think when, and I go back to my original statement when you said that was not false, but I think what happens, man, is if you jump around in too many different areas when you're making your statements, the central theme is lost. And I think that's what you keep doing, is jumping around. Now, if you go back to what I said, now this is a historical fact, so if you have some more facts, that some historical facts, I'd like to hear them. I said, nothing rivals a culture but a culture. And there's only one culture can occupy space at one time. There's no two cultures in no one space. So if, in fact, the black woman, as is the black man, is raised, protected, fed, taught, and maintained in a European culture, that shouldn't surprise you that she sees the European man as a man. Why wouldn't she? She's raised in his culture.
Yeah, but that would go the same for black men. I mean, we just stated that 98% work for whites, so it would be the same for black men. Why
you don't think that 98% of black men see the white man as the man?
I'm sorry, say again?
I said you don't believe that 98% of black men in America see the white man as the man?
Are you saying that that's affirmative?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's seen throughout his actions.
I'm okay with that. I mean, that logically follows. But now the point is, how do you address the misconception and the dysfunction of a group where both genders are sorely confused and misdirected?
Well, now this is where we get into a different conversation. It'll take us somewhere else. I don't think this is where I'm under the belief that nothing rivals a culture but a culture. Okay, so if the dominant culture needs black females and they spit out, I mean, if the black woman's character and personality and her worldview is developed in European culture, and so is the black males, which is supposed to, I think we have to look at our sanity if we think, in fact, we can, inside of another man's culture, change that. You're not going to do it. It will never be done. You said that dysfunction will always be in the black man and the black woman as long as they're inside of a European culture, always.
So you're saying it's hopeless.
Inside of a European's culture, yes. Yes, sir.
You agree with that, Eric?
Well, let's look at the science.
You know what? I would actually have to agree with him on that one.
Let's look at we can look at history and look at the science. He don't have to agree. Let's let the science talk. It doesn't happen anywhere on the planet.
Well, let me state this. There are other cultures here. America is a pluralistic society, and at the same time, it has multiple cultures. You have Asian, you have Hispanic, obviously you have blacks, and you have whites. Now, all those other groups are able to carve out a niche, an identifiable power base for themselves. How
but that
do they
don't mean
do?
You have multiple. That's different, though, bro. Let me show you how. You're talking about ethnic groups who are operating inside of a dominant culture for specific things. There is not an Asian culture and a European culture operating in the same space at the same time. those Asians are just inside of the European culture for specific reasons. They know where the line is drawn. Those are not two cultures operating in the same space.
Okay, but I think you may be being a little bit too esoteric. This is my point. My point is the Asians operate autonomously. They have one of the reasons that unemployment is lower among Asian and other groups is because they also employ their own. They have their own businesses, their own functional communities. At the same time, now blacks have a larger economic base. Blacks, if you look at go to Target Market News, they point out that blacks spend something like over three-quarters of $1 trillion, over $750 billion. But none of that money returns to their community to empower them. That's what Dr. Anderson's book, Powernomics, is all about. So it can be done. I mean, one can create a set within a subset within a set, and but they have to be conscious of what they're doing. They have to be intentional and purposeful.
Okay, can let me add two things there. Let's see if we one of the reasons why, if you look at the, like you said, if you snapshot and look at the Asians and what they're able to do inside of this European culture, and then say, aha, that's a model for us. Okay, if you look at the history of Africans in this country, what the Asians are doing now, there's a history of us already have done that. So functioning communities or attempting to put together functioning communities, self-sustained, there's a history of us having tried and done that and then it being dismantled. So it's not a question of,
but you make a phenomenal point, if I just may interrupt. If you've done it, then the greater likelihood is that you can do it again.
And
why?
That's
you've
where
already
we're
done
this
it.
This is where we're at. This is what I'm saying. Now, here's my theory. The best of the black community inside the European culture you've already saw. You won't see it again.
And why is that?
Because one of the variables that you have to keep in place is that a culture is always moving, right? It is never sitting still. So when you look at the dynamics of what it will take to have that done again, alongside of the culture continuously moving, alongside of immigration, alongside of the politics of the nation and all of those things, if you look at all of those variables and add them to that, if you say it can be done, I would have to say, show me the foundation by which you can put those things in place to make it happen.
Now, see, you said the key word there, foundation.
Okay.
Keep going.
Now, the theory that I choose is this one. Now, Marcus Garvey said this a long time ago, and we sweep it under the rug or toss it in the toilet stool. I don't know. But now this is what he said, so now don't jump on me. He said, until the African man retakes the continent of Africa, you will not see a strong African anywhere else on the planet. Now,
well,
had
you finished?
Yeah.
Well, no, I often ask that question, where in the world do blacks exercise economic and political autonomy? I don't think they would have to take all of Africa, just some of it, to where they would have a base.
Mm-hmm.
But look, the only place black American knows is America. Now, let me just ask you a direct question so we can cut through the chase, if you don't mind. Yourself, one of the best and the brightest?
Huh? What
do
you say to me, bro?
Do you consider yourself one of the best and the brightest?
I don't know if I would characterize it as that. I would give you a definition of what I consider myself. I consider myself a functional Pan-Africanist. So now,
okay.
Are
you living in America?
Yes, I'm. Right now, I am living in America, but I do travel to Africa. I have business and all type of involvements in Africa.
I understand. Now, the other question: do you think you're super exceptional that no one else can duplicate what you've done?
Absolutely not.
So in other words, the answer is yes. Someone else can duplicate what you've done?
Absolutely, yes.
And you consider yourself functional, correct?
Yes, a functional Pan-African.
All right, that's fine. Yes. We're living in a, don't you think if you were to outline what
we're talking
you
about
did,
the politics of the race, though, just put that in there. I see where you hit it. That's me as an individual.
If,
we're talking about
I understand,
of, okay,
but race
right.
is microcosmically.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're dealing with the same element, because if more people practice the same thing, then you increase it from the individual level to the community level and so on and so forth, right?
Yes.
All I'm saying is you're not an accident. You did what you did to make yourself the functional, productive human being you are. And you acknowledge that other people could do the same thing if they follow the same path, right?
But let me say this though, brother, because actually, inside of America, I am an accident, because I am not supposed to have this mind state. It's called.
But that's not the point. You didn't live according to what you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
See, in one instance, you identify with humanity, and in the other sense, you totally separate yourself as if no one could follow the path you follow.
No,
do you
no,
follow
no.
this, Eric? Do you see the position here?
No.
I'm following.
Okay. See, this is the point. If it's just like, we teach people their ABCs. Why do we do that? Now, maybe some people would learn their ABCs on their own. Not many, but some would. So what we do is we inculcate, we teach them. So what you learn, it can be taught if the people want it. That's the thing. We are volitional. We can be fools or we can be wise men. We make the decision. America is at a state now, and I argue with racists and separatists a lot, okay, and I love it. And I even point out, and Dr. Anderson points out, that there are two things that afflict blacks in America. Certainly, racism had a part in history, but today it's basically inappropriate behavior, their own inappropriate behavior. Because you have a choice as to what you do today. They don't lynch you now for the things they used to. I mean, you actually have entree to the restaurants and all that stuff that was struggled for in the 50s and 60s and early 70s. So what a person has to do today is put that to productive use.
Well, that's the only thing, brother. I think this is where I think people put on blinders in thinking that, like you said, if you see a person like me and then say, aha, this can be mass-produced in America.
Didn't you follow a plan?
Yeah, but
did you follow a plan or not?
No, I didn't follow a plan that was laid out here in America.
I don't care where it was laid out.
Okay, let me go this way, brother.
What I'm trying to do, if you will allow me to do it.
Well, I've been letting you talk. I just when you stopped, I started talking.
What I'm asking you is, see, you all of a sudden, initially, you acted as if you weren't the exception. Now you're laying yourself out as the super exception.
No, brother, no.
Well, if you're not the super exception, what you did can be duplicated. That's all we're saying here.
Okay, all right. Then if you look at the history of what blacks have been trying to do in this country, it is to try to duplicate that independence. So, I mean, that's a matter of fact that we've always tried to do that in America. So that's not a newsflash.
I would disagree with you vehemently, and let me give you a quick example
okay.
how I say what you just said is wrong.
Okay.
Now, I'm not disagreeing with your success, because that's yours.
Yeah,
you own that. But what I am saying to you, when I talk to Eric all the time, Eric, you want to give him the three rules?
Three rules. Have at least a year worth of cash saved up.
All your bills current. All your monthly
current.
Bills current.
You're right. And the
have at least salary saved.
Right. It's 1 year. And the elimination. Have elimination within the past 12 hours.
Right. And that's something that if a person doesn't have, they can strive to achieve it. And that'll put them in a position of power and a position of high self-esteem so they can go to further heights. I'm not saying that that's the highest goal that one should reach for.
Right.
But that is a fundamental and basic goal
right.
that I think anyone should have or be striving for before they even try to offer any advice. And the reason I say that is because if your bills aren't paid, you are being harassed, and that detracts from your focus. You're being stressed out. Is that true, Eric? If you have people hounding you for money, collection agencies, and all that BS, doesn't that sap energy?
Yes, that kills your energy, your drive, your spirit. Yes.
And if you haven't had an elimination in the last 12 hours, what are you? Toxic.
Hey, I'm going to agree with that too, bro. The bills are stressful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what we're saying here, we're just giving some baby steps toward where you have arrived. See, I really hate to hear people, you know, put themselves in a position that they feel like no one else can achieve. If a human did it, another human can follow.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with that, but I think it's almost like this is saying you can, it's almost like selling blind faith. Now, hear me out on that. It's selling blind faith without, it's because you could say, well, if another person hit the lottery, you could too. You know, but the thinking that I have as a functional Pan-Africanist is not success thinking in general. You see? This is not just, the secret or, you know, what do you call it?
Well, just to bring you face-to-face with reality, would you say that blacks are better off in America today than they were, say, in the 30s and 40s and 50s from a legal and social standpoint?
No.
Really?
Yes. No.
What about you, Eric? Do you agree with that?
What, that he said no?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that. I'm ready to listen to this explanation on this one.
Okay, he said from a legal, right?
Right. And
social. A social, right?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're talking about legal, you're getting ready to get into the system of reward and punishment of a culture or a society or the judicial system. Who makes law? Who enforces it? Who don't have to and who has to abide by it? When you put that in that context, then now go get the statistics on the relationships that Africans have and have had to the judicial system and the concept of law. And then now we don't need nobody's opinion there because those statistics will talk to you. They will talk. So you'll need a theory. Okay, now let's go social. Same thing. Give the definition of social. And to me, when you're talking about sociology, you're talking about the core thing of sociology is a relationship. So you say socially. Are you saying that our relationship with this culture is better than it was? Or our relationship to each other? Which one are you talking about?
Well,
and the statistics bear out that it is not any better.
Okay, let me state this because I think this just demonstrates to me why there needs to be so much intense communication. Now, it will probably never happen. But in terms of civil rights, and that's the reason I framed the question the way I did, when blacks were excluded from public accommodation, when they couldn't attend universities, and particularly they could not attend white universities. So you're telling me today that you don't feel that after the Civil Rights Acts have been passed, that blacks have greater access to the society than they did before that.
But
you're
not
willing
that,
to tell me that right
now,
here.
Now, when you get done, Eric, play this back, because what he just said now is not what he said.
No,
he
it's
said
the
better
same.
Off.
Wait. See, that's the thing. You don't understand what's being said.
No. I heard what you said.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Civil rights are legal rights.
Huh? Civil rights are legal rights.
Yes.
Oh, so you're using the civil rights movement as you're saying we're better off based off
only
the civil
part
rights.
Of it. I'm just using part of it to say that your civil rights were legally denied. If you were black and could be identified as black in the 50s, even in the 60s, when was the Civil Rights Act passed, Eric? 64 thereabouts?
Yes.
Okay, here's what's happening, brother. We just got two different worldviews. I see it now. Let me just say why I said that. When you say civil rights to me, the first thing that comes to my mind is this. Dr. Claude Anderson was doing a seminar in Detroit. He said, let me tell you what's wrong with black folk. He said, when you have people who stand for trees, they know what they stand for, the rights of trees. Gays stand for rights of gays. If you want to save the whales, say when you get the blacks, they are for civil rights. He said, now who in your damn family name civil? What's their address? What's their last name? In other words, this. To me, now that's why I said two different worldviews, I don't look to civil rights and things of that nature to see if there's better access to this culture. I wouldn't use that as a marker. I would never use that as a marker, according to my worldview. But you would, see, so.
So wait a minute. So did you go to a university? Did you attend a university?
No.
Okay. Do you have children?
Yes.
Did you encourage them to attend a university?
Yes. No, well, actually, three of them haven't gotten out of grade school yet, but I do have a son that's in a university. But
did you encourage that?
No, actually, I didn't. Actually, I encouraged him to go into business.
Okay, that's fine too.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But you also want them to have an education. You want them to be literate, right?
Yeah. Well, you can be literate in 2 years, man. So I mean, that ain't got nothing to do with college.
See, this is the point. I would love for you to write a book so that I could get clear what the hell you're saying. That's the problem. You're not being upfront and straightforward. Now,
whoa,
it is better to have an educated populace. Blacks were denied their civil rights, their legal rights under the Constitution. That's what the civil rights movement was about. Is correcting the laws. So the issue was mainly with the government. The government was obstructing, restricting, and denying the not only the civil rights, but even the human rights.
Okay. What's unclear about this, brother? What's unclear about this? When you look at the statistics of the number of blacks now, before we were going to school and getting the education, when we started going in mass and wherever it's at now, what's unclear about this? The position of blacks in this society have not changed even with that. Is that unclear?
Well, no. I hear you there.
Okay,
depending
so now
on which,
I'm starting my premise from that.
Allow me to make the
there.
A fortiori point. I want to make the a fortiori point.
Okay?
The point is that the people have greater opportunities. Now, whether they take advantage of them is up to them. But the fact of it is, no one is openly obstructing your rights.
Okay, if you say something like that, I wouldn't disagree with that. In other words, I never did disagree with that. I didn't say you couldn't go to school.
Eric, I never
said that. Yeah.
But see, prior to the passage of the civil rights, you were prevented. They even had restrictive covenants. You couldn't even live in certain places.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's true.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm saying. So let's not sit here and lie. We need to be conscious of reality. And all I'm saying, I'm not saying, in fact, I lament and deplore the fact that more blacks don't take advantage of their opportunities. But they need opportunities to be clearly spelled out. Talking to you oftentimes, you do not offer clarity.
Okay, let me now, what I think before even blacks get into higher education and things of that nature, you know, and seeking job opportunities and career opportunities, I'm saying that what has to be submitted first is a race-based political consciousness, which that opportunity is not afforded in this culture, and it shouldn't be afforded. So now, when you connect that dot, I'm saying even if you do the success talk, go get the schooling, and you're right, go get the good-paying job, and you're right, it's out there, you can do it, save some money, pay your bills. If you're talking about as a race, we'll let history see where we're at if we just do that in 50 more years. We'll see what history writes about that theory of getting a job, getting a good education, and paying your bills. We'll let history judge it.
So can you tell me in 3 points what is your prescription for success of black Americans?
For success of black Americans, I think you saw the best of what you're going to see in black America. I believe that there's just a small group inside of black America who has to refocus their attention back to the continent of Africa. I believe that, okay, you're going to lose some generations. Now, if you want to say that's negative talk or that's dull talk or devil talk, then that's fine. The best of the black community you have already saw. To me, that's a war strategy. We're at war. To be focusing on the blacks with a continent, to be focusing on the African American is marking time.
So your point is to return to Africa?
No, I didn't. Now, that don't mean pack up a suitcase. Those with a consciousness that understand that we've got to rehab Africa before you see a strong African anywhere else, their attention, their disposable income, their politics, and those things have to be, that energy has to be put on the continent through networks, not necessarily you being there, through organization of you getting into the continent and affecting change there. Now, this is not a 20-year strategy. That's the other thing. This is looking long term.
Hey, Eric, I don't disagree with this gentleman, but maybe you would do a show on that to get into the specificity if he's willing to divulge it. I don't know. It may be top secret.
I was just thinking the same thing. I really
You may want to do a show on that.
It's
but
a
now,
top
getting,
secret.
Getting back to the our biracial marriages, relationships, the norm, we've already said absolutely not.
Yeah, we said that. Being that we've been talking about so many different things, let me ask this question in regards to biracial marriages. Do you think, now I'm asking this to either one, do you think that in some cases interracial marriages are done to, say, better themselves, for one party to better themselves than from where they were?
Sometimes I think that could be true. There's a notion called hypergamy, and that's the notion of basically women marrying up, hypergamy. There can be a benefit in that because you want to marry or be in partnership with someone who helps you and who, I want to be careful how I say this, who enhances you. I'll just say it that way. In other words, you want someone who enhances you as opposed to suppresses you.
Right.
So I don't see a problem with that per se, but I do see a problem with it if it's parasitic as opposed to being symbiotic. And that just simply means if you're willing to give something, to get something, you know, or the quid pro quo, as we say, I think that's fine because a relationship is a working partnership. Mm-hmm. But I think that hello?
Yeah. I'm here. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think that's an important aspect. But I think what happens, what doesn't happen so many times is that we haven't been taught how to relate to each other to even discover that. And I think one gender, as I often say, has been given, you know, all the power for communication. And they're more or less stymieing communication than enhancing. Because as I always say, Eric, if women would open, and I was talking to several women about this last night, and they agreed, by the way, which was a change of their former position, if they would be friendlier, which would be more open to the male approach, and if they would do some approaching themselves and have a plan for actually having meaningful communication, I think the environment could be so much enriched. What do you think?
Yes, I can agree with that one. Yes.
I would agree with that as well. One of the things I do think that I think that makes for, you know, a better relationship is, now, and I often tell my wife this, I get in trouble for it as well, but it's, I think if a person can find purpose outside of themselves personally and then connect with someone else who has found purpose outside of themselves personally, I think that's a damn good foundation for the open, like the brother said, by communication. I think that is a good foundation to begin communications, because it lets you into who that person is better than from a selfish point of view. You know what I'm saying? Is if they found purpose before they even have a mate, if they found some type of purpose and something that they're willing to live and die for, I think that to me seems like the best foundation to start communication from, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's true. And I had to disabuse an older guy. He said he was 66. I had to disabuse him of the false notion that there aren't sufficient men out there.
Right, yeah, I heard that, yeah. I agree with you. Yeah, I heard. I agree with that one as well. Yeah, I don't know where he, but, you know, well, I know where he got it from. But, yeah, you're correct.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead. I was just agreeing with that.
Well, that lie is so often repeated, and people generally don't research or even observe. They just absorb, especially bad information. And he was saying that, and I say, look, now see what black women have done. And by the way, all women graduate in higher numbers from college than men. And I have the statistics here before me, but black women have made it, at least in conversation, a sole platform that a man has to have a degree. Well, black men still out-earn black women by about what they call one standard deviation if you're on the bell curve, but it's 15 percentage points. So they make 85 cents to the black man's dollar. So black men out-earn black women in virtually every category. And so black women have made this absolutely nuttish standard that a guy has to have the same degree they have and this kind of thing. Most black men who work in, say, skilled professions have more money than black women. I think it was the Griot and also the Huffington Post reprinted the article that single black women, and I want to put that in quotations and all caps, single black women have a net mean asset worth of a mere $5. When you subtract all of their debts from their assets, they're left with $5. So they aren't doing that well financially themselves.
That's a true point. That's true. I can't. That is definitely true.
Well, what do you think?
makes the black women of the mind state that, hey, you know, if you ain't got no degree, you know, I'm gonna look past you. Where did that come from?
Well, it's like you said before, appropriately so, and I'm just putting it in context, is they try to live in a European ideology, and they think that that all of a sudden makes them, you know, having arrived just because they have an education. And I agreed with you earlier. There are different types of education. I agreed with you earlier, the entrepreneurship, starting a business. And that is more important. But you do want to get a foundational education.
Yeah.
But starting a business will, I would say, almost without exception, a business-minded person is going to be a higher earner than a worker bee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree with that 100%. And I talk about, but see, black men can't have conversations with black women if black women are being these little Hitlers and dictators and making up all the rules as they go along, which most of them do. And so I just encourage all of you guys to confront black women, you know, do it nicely, but get them engaged in a real conversation, and then watch them. Watch how they respond to real communication. See if they like it, because my position is that it's going to take some socialization to even get them used to normalcy. They behave on a very selfish plateau that no one can reach them. I had to tell several black women the other night, just stop talking and listen. You already know that.
Oh, man, you didn't get hit, did you?
Well, you know, I have my balls. I don't suffer from TBS, tiny ball syndrome. So what I told the black woman, several of them, just be quiet. Just listen.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt you to listen. You already know the dysfunctional information you're practicing, and it's not working. Just listen.
Yeah.
And the brother joined in. He said, well, yeah, that's true. You should listen. And we had a great conversation. And, in fact, she invited me to be on her show.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I think this is where we do have to step up just a little bit, and I agree with everything you said. I think some of what she's saying without saying it is that, hey, you know, this idea of how I define a man, you know, you're just not there. And so, you know, show me more, you know. And I think that's a good critique of us, you know, a little bit, that we've got to show up a little bit more as men, you know, if we say we're men in the community. I think we do need to show up a little more. So I think she is saying that, too, without saying it a little bit. She do need to be quiet, though, too. So I'm agreeing with you there. But I think we do need to show up a little bit more.
But what do you mean show up? If she dismisses a look, let me. Eric had a show on recently where it said, "Where are the black men?" When the black men show up, now they don't club the woman over the head and drag her off and just take possession of her. If the man shows up and she rejects the man,
yeah,
what is to be done? Because that's usually what happens.
You familiar with Amos Wilson?
Well, but I'm asking you the question to that question. When the men show up, and they do show up, and the women rebuff them, you know, they're bitchy, they're antagonistic, right? They're bellicose, they're acrimonious. When the men show up and they're rejected by the women, what then?
Well, I would suggest you just keep moving.
Okay, well, then the women blame the men for not being there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I guess it's a fine hair. But
No. It's not a fine hair at all. The point is, the clear-cut point, and you tell me if I'm on point, Eric, the women need to be more cognizant of what they're doing, and men have to let them know, just like now. Now, you'll get some women who will love to hear the kind of stuff we're talking about because we're talking real talk. But then you have most of your black women are very dismissive. Anything you say, they're going to dismiss it. So this is what has led guys to say, only a very small percentage of women, period. But if you go to the black group of women, black American women, only about 5 to 10% of them make good girlfriend and good wife material. And hence, that's the reason they are not wives and girlfriends.
Wow.
Now, what do you have to say to that?
Well, I have some a female just text me because so many men come playing games.
Well, she's got to let them know, and then she's got to talk to men because this woman last night was talking about it's all about the man approaching her. That's where the woman starts the game. She starts the game by demanding that the men approach her. That's the game right there. Because when men watch her and look at the way she treats, especially the honest guy, now, when Satan and Dracula show up, oh, she throws the gates open for them. And then when they pump her and dump her, use her as a booty call, and then she says, well, men are like, no, the men you choose. That's the reason I always make the woman responsible for her outcome. I say the men you choose. And I was discussing this yesterday. Women will say, and some TBS men will say, well, you blame the woman for everything. No, I don't. I blame her for what she needs to be blamed for. And then I'll ask them, well, what responsibility do you put on adult women? And what you know what the answer is? Nothing.
Nothing, yep.
That's right. They don't put any responsibility on the woman. Do you have daughters, by the way, sir?
No, I have all boys.
Oh, you have all sons. Yeah. Now, do you tell your sons that all women are good women and that they deserve to be treated with the utmost of respect?
The discussion about women, I kind of let, when they come to me, you know, I just kind of let it flow. With just the statement you made, I don't know, I probably have said something similar to that. I just don't know. You know what I'm saying? I kind of see what it is they're trying to ask me about women, and I just kind of take it from there. But,
well, I would encourage you to be proactive and tell them about women because they would need your wisdom to help explain that to them. Eric, there's a book called Bad Girls of the Bible. Well, I believe that's the title, Bad Girls of the Bible. But if you start page that, you can find it. It would be great to get that. Eve was one. Jezebel.
Let me write that down. Who wrote that, bro?
Yeah, I don't know the author right offhand, but it's called Bad Girls of the Bible. I think it was a woman that wrote it. Bad Girls of the Bible. Eve, starting with Eve. Eve was a bad girl, and of course we know Jezebel, Delilah. And even Rebecca in her later years, Rebecca turned into a bad girl.
Okay, Mr. Solution, I have a question for you.
Yeah, sure.
Coming from a listener, they want to know if you have kids and how old are you?
I'm over 40, no.
Okay. Okay. That was it.
Check this out. I'm a great catch. But let me tell you what. Black women, more than any other women, and I set out to prove what I say, do not know how to date. They do not. The dating is the foundation for a relationship. And black American women are horrible daters.
Hold on. I think I got another caller want to get in on this.
Oh, boy.
That's 20 minutes.
Now, see, notice how the guys are afraid.
I'm going to stand on the other side of the street from my man. I'm just kidding, dude. But I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. I'm just really being facetious. I'm just kidding with you.
Okay. All right.
I don't suffer from what you call it, TBS either.
Right. Good.
At all. So I run my house.
Yes. Good afternoon, guys.
Yes.
Yes. My name is Antonio, and I just have a question for Mr. Solution.
Okay, Antonio, go ahead.
I was wondering, what was it exactly, or do you know what was there during the 30s, 40s, and 50s that women, black women back then, had effective communication with black men, or was that all a farce?
No, I think it was more genuine then, because they were in a common state of suppression and oppression. So I think they did relate to each other much better. In fact, up until the 60s, I believe blacks had a higher marriage rate than whites in the country.
Hey, can I throw something in there? Can I throw something in there with the call? And I think some of that has to do with what I had said earlier about, he just said the word, common. In other words, the foundation of the relationship was not about themselves individually, I think, at that time. It was more, hey, we both in this foxhole, you know, we got the same goals of getting out of this foxhole together, and I think it just, that drove, you know, the relationship. It had nothing to do with them personally, you know, about, you know, and stuff like that. So I think that goes back to my point of having some purpose or some common purpose other than the selfish purpose.
Exactly, exactly. It was today it's extreme meism. Meism, it's hyper meism.
Yeah.
It's nothing about us or what we can develop. And what I encourage people to do is just try to strike up a conversation with a black woman, because that's ultimately what people do. They connect with people that are strangers. See how she responds. See how social she is. See what kind of conversation she has, and then report back. I've encouraged people to do. I've encouraged women to actually do things that will give them something palpable to actually demonstrate to themselves what's going on. You know, so that because I think a lot of times black women, unfortunately, don't even see how stinky their behavior is and how objectionable it is, and how they're turning off every possibility. You see?
Yeah. I, one of the things I think, I guess, just a different little point of view. It seems that Mr. Solutions, how would you say, the lion's share of the dysfunction between black males and black females, the relatability and the relationship, it seems like he tends to lean that the dysfunction, more of the dysfunction, is coming from the woman. And I think I disagree with that. I think more of the dysfunction is coming from the man than her.
All right, let me show you why I come to that conclusion, okay? Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, bro.
All right, just do an experiment and try to talk to a black woman. See how social she is, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about communicating here. And then you come back and tell me if I'm wrong. If she's easy to talk to, if she's easy to relate to, then I'll admit I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong, Eric. Is she easy to talk to? Is she easy to access?
No.
Now, see, Eric, now I think it depends on what you talk about, because I think it depends on what the brother going up there to talk to her about, Mr. Solutions.
See, that's where part of your problem
is. Conversation. You just said start a conversation. But
if a relationship
if you
is
9
mutual,
out of 10 men, if when they go to start a conversation with a woman now, they trying to get some pussy.
All right, but that's always part of the whenever a man is attracted to a woman and vice versa, they want to have sex. Okay, that's understood. But now notice how you open your statement. When a guy goes up to her, what's wrong with that statement? I'm going to let you critique it. You're a sharp man. What's wrong with your opening statement?
I don't think anything wrong with it. When he go up to her, he trying
wrong
to get some,
with it. I'll tell you what's wrong with it. You ready?
Okay, go ahead.
It's a unilateral mindset. What about her going up to some guys? Don't you think sometimes she could make a better choice in whom she approaches than the men who approach her?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Hey, that's my point. You get that, Eric?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay.
Well, I was curious, like, can we pinpoint where exactly this communication barrier broke, where they no longer can't relate to one another? Is there a time where we can point to that?
Yeah, I can do that somewhat historically. If you look up the Daniel Patrick Moynihan report, that was under the auspices of the Department of Labor, when government America started to subsidize the black female and actually demand that the black male not be available. Instead of providing jobs and opportunities for the black male and the black family, they just subsidized the female, which set up a hostility and this false sense of superiority in the female. And, of course, she took on that particular nature, and she perpetuates it.
So we could say then it's sometime during the 60s that it was almost like the death knell to the whole black community.
Well, that was certainly the commencing of it.
Well, I think, but what you have to add to that, and I do understand that point, is if in fact, but what, see, that when there was a breakdown somewhere else that had nothing to do with either her or him, though. See, so you have to add that in there, because we just said prior to that, we did see a functional relationship, right? So who,
right, but let me say
who
this.
Dropped
then
the ball?
You had,
I mean, in other words, who dropped
wait,
the ball
wait, wait,
to
let me,
where?
Let me throw this at you.
Okay.
Then you had feminism, and I think white women had a legitimate complaint that white men had excluded them from the system, that is jobs and what have you. And then they drew the black woman in, and what she did is told a lie that the black man was suppressing her.
Right.
Well, the black man never prohibited the black woman from voting.
Right. Right.
Never prohibited her from getting employment. So it was like the white woman used the black woman as a dumb mule to further her purposes, and the black woman had no better sense than to jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah, I think
what they probably were saying was probably abuse or domestic abuse. I don't know if that can fit into that argument there.
Yeah, but there wasn't that either. I mean, black men weren't habitually abusing women. That doesn't fly either.
No, I don't know.
And let me say this. Who chooses? See, black women don't even want to acknowledge that they select the man whom they're with. You heard Miss Lewis the other day lying and saying, well, the man selects me. The only way that could be balanced out is you do as much initiating as the man does, because otherwise you're sitting in the seat of privilege just exercising veto. You're just, nullifying the men. Because women, look at the men that women reject. So they are exercising power.
Right.
And a lot of women don't want to share that power. That's what I say to women is if you want a mate, you have to be willing to share power, not just consume it and absorb it for yourself. You have to be willing to share it. So, no, black men, just like no other men love women. Women have to select the men that are most compatible with them. Not the man who's the most exciting and most worthless, but the man who is actually the better mate. And women often don't do that. That's why I say women select the Dracula and the Satan characteristic in men before they do the nice guy. And remember, there's a running statement, nice guys finish last. What does that mean? That means that women generally don't choose nice guys. That's what that means.
Now, can we say that that black men, let's say in the 30s, 40s, 50s, in parts of the 60s that had better relationships, were they considered nice guys, or would they be considered bad boys? Like, would nice guys had a better chance back then than they would have today?
Well, I think there's no doubt about that. And when we say nice, we just mean appropriate, fitting, respectful.
Yes, 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 yes.
Well, yes, yeah, I would have to agree, yes.
See, that, but that's why with in trying to dig into what the question that he's asking, that's why I think it to go that route, I don't think it doesn't jive when you go that route with it about the nice guy. Because, again, if you grab the statistics of who the black woman was then and who the black man was now, and, again, it was a function there. And that's why I'm still disagreeing with the Mr. Solutions a little bit, because if you look at the average black woman today that maybe say has a baby and she's a single mother, and a lot of them are, that's, we just talking about the current situation. When another man comes along, the concept of power, well, they have had all the power, meaning they've had to feed these babies, they've had to take, you know, they've had to do all of that, and you say, hey, when a man comes in here, you have to share the power. So it's almost like there is a barrier put up there that needs to be broken down. And that's why I think the man has to take the responsibility, like I said, step up. And I just don't see women naturally having a barrier, wanting to have a barrier to a good man. I don't see that.
Well, look, yeah. I'm going to put it like this, and I understand what you're saying. But if we're going to go back to the 50s and 60s, look at how the things, women were having babies back then too. But it was no problem with them staying home and cooking and taking care of the baby while the man went out and did what he had to do, correct?
No, we was talking about now, though, when she's had a baby and there is no man.
No,
baby's
no.
Daddy ain't there. He ain't going to
okay,
get
I'm getting to that. Getting to that. All right. Now, so the foundation of the family was there, right? Now, we fast forward. Now, listen to what I'm saying. As we fast forward, now, the women become, as they say, more independent, correct?
Right.
So they say they're more independent. And what is one of the things you hear women say all the time that single, I don't need no man?
Is that by choice or nature or culture?
That's by choice. They're the ones saying it.
No.
Are they saying
that because, you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, are they saying that because that's their nature? Or are they saying that because of experience and what they've been through? I think that has a lot to do with it, too. I don't think a woman just, well, okay, if it was just natural, that means she's always been like that.
What I would encourage you to do is to call in more, and women who you see that say that, you convince them otherwise. See, because that would take some of the wind out of your sail, because you're sitting up here asking guys to correct severely dysfunctional women. And women make a choice to do what they do. And we've got to look at those choices, and we've got to hold women accountable for those choices.
Even
if someone tells you right now, let's go rob a bank. You didn't want to rob a bank. That wasn't your interest. But you say, okay.
Okay, Mr. Solution. So then here's the ma'at, M-A-A-T of it. The balance. What are you saying? Are you saying that the women are more dysfunctional than the men?
Absolutely. You don't even have to. Yes, women are more dysfunctional than men, and it's only men who suffer from tiny ball TBS, tiny ball syndrome, who don't acknowledge it. If you go all the way back to Adam and Eve, look at the woman. She had a perfect man, Adam. She left him for the fiend.
That's
mythology, that is a metaphor,
man. Don't
and actually.
Mythology. Yeah.
That's an actual for what women do today. Look up that article I had, Love Lessons, Decoding the Desire for the Bad Boy, by Natasha Burden, where she talks about women look for the elusive, the unavailable guy. They look for the fixer-up guy. They look for broken guys. Because why? If a woman gets with a guy like me, is she going to be able to play games and play that crap? No.
Right.
She's going to have to come up and behave properly. And many women don't want to do that. Like one guy said, a lot of women would rather be the queen of the dump than to be in a healthy relationship.
Well, hey, Eric, maybe you could do a whole show on that, because I believe that if you're talking about the state of relationships between black males and black females, if you're looking for weighing the dysfunction, I think it's more on the male than the female.
Well, why do you think, okay, if that would be fine if males had the ability, the legal and social ability to make the choices. Women choose the men. Men don't choose the women. So I would agree with you 100%. See, what happens is the woman's power is oftentimes, how should I say, it's disguised. And a lot of people who don't look at the woman closely won't understand her power.
All right.
We just have to agree to disagree on this one, bro.
Well, you know what? We're going to have to end it right there because I have 4 minutes left. But I sure enjoyed the conversation. Galladay, is it Galladay?
Yeah, Metu.
Metu, okay. Metu. Mr. Solution, of course. Antonio, thank you for calling in.
All right. Good
wonderful
one.
Show.
Okay.
All right.
Peace.
All right, y'all. That was another great, great show. You know what? And as I mentioned before I started, I really wasn't feeling it today. I really wasn't feeling the show. But you know what? It has been a great, great show. And I'm glad I've done it. That's right. I'm glad I've done it. Now, tomorrow, of course, is Friday. So, you know, we got Fun Friday tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Hey, I got some surprises for y'all tomorrow night. So make sure you tune in. Other than that, don't forget early voting is going on in some places like Texas. So instead of waiting till the actual the date, the 6th, hey, go on and get out there when you get a chance. Just riding around, stop by a poll and go on and place that vote. Then you don't have to worry about it because your vote has already been casted. Then you don't have to worry about getting turned away on the day of. Huh? All right. That's what I'm saying. Okay, y'all. I got to do my commercial one more time. One more time. Here we go. Taste more like barbecue and snack bar.
Hey, Killeen Fort Hood, are you looking for some down-home smoked barbecue? Meat so tender it falls off the bone? If so, I have the perfect place for you. Taste Like More Barbecue and Snack Bar, located at 1015 Adams Avenue, just 2 minutes from the Fort Hood East Gate. They're open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. The menu includes barbecue ribs, chicken, mouth-watering brisket, macaroni and cheese, potato salad, coleslaw, baked beans, collard greens, rice and beans. They also have red tea. They also have Kool-Aid. Yes, y'all, Kool-Aid. The red Kool-Aid. You hear me? Oh, yeah. And all the food is prepared daily. That's what I'm talking about. You have trouble getting off of work and you're going to sit down and eat, no problem. They take call-in orders. Just give them a call. 254-213-9660. Tastes Like More Barbecue and Snack Bar. Woo! Barbecue so good, makes you want to come back for more. Check them out.
All right. And he does have 10% discounts for military and college students. Well, students, period. Just show your ID, you get 10% off your meal. Outstanding food over there. Well, y'all, that about does it for me for today. And remember, when you get home tonight, or when you walk in the door in a few, and you see that special someone sitting there, or a meat at the door, let them know how much you appreciate them. Let them know you care. No, give them a hug. It's not going to hurt to give one hug. All right? Well, until then, I'll see y'all tomorrow night. Y'all have a good one. I'm out of here.